But as we pick up where we left off, and last week we heard that David was chosen to be the next king of Israel, even though there was already a king in place. And I told you that he was an unlikely choice, not because there was already a king, that's a part of it, but because of something we would call actually a rigid age-related patriarchy. When Samuel the prophet, who was the one to choose the next king by God's direction, showed up in Bethlehem to talk to Jesse, what did Jesse do but send his firstborn and oldest in front of Samuel first? Because it made sense to do so. Now, this is no longer who we are as a people, but I certainly think we could make an argument about the dangers of patriarchy. But in those days, the oldest son was the golden child. So it would make sense that if the next king of Israel is going to come from Jesse's sons, it would be the oldest. Because in those days, the oldest would receive the most inheritance and become the head of the family when the father died. But we soon hear that David is an unlikely choice because Eliab, the firstborn, wasn't chosen, nor the next seven in age. They were all passed over by God. And then we finally hear in this story that David wasn't even included in this lineup as God kept saying, no, 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 each one younger than the other. So not only was David forgotten by his father, but I think there were other things going on too. If you didn't know that David was a prolific songwriter, we find many of his songs in a book called the Psalms. And we see that David struggled with his relationships in the family. As a matter of fact, if you look to Psalm 69 in one of his laments, look what he says. He says, I am a stranger to my brothers, an alien to my own mother's sons. So not only was David kind of the least important as it came to his father, but we see that there was tension within his own family among his brothers. And I'm sure it was only exacerbated when he was the one anointed or chosen to be the next king of Israel. He was already marginalized. No, he doesn't matter. He's out watching the sheep. And it only probably got worse after that. And we're actually going to hear a little bit about that today. And it reminds me often of, maybe you know the story of Joseph in the book of Genesis in the Old Testament, where Joseph is hated by his brothers because they are jealous of him. He's the guy with the coat of many colors. And he was sold off into slavery because they hated Joseph so much. So like David, he was treated poorly. So David's this unlikely choice, but we move on in the story today. And we really pick up in the next chapter. We were in chapter 16 of 1 Samuel. Now we're in chapter 17. And we have no idea how much time has passed between the choosing of David as the next king and this next encounter. What we hear as this chapter begins is that Israel is at war with the Philistines, which is a common thing of that time, meaning they were always having border skirmishes, and their archenemy at that time were the Philistines. And most of you who know the story, that there's this champion among the Philistines named Goliath who makes this outrageous proposal as the two countries are lined up for the war. Goliath comes out and says, rather than have an all-out battle, let's have a one-on-one battle between me, Goliath, and anyone of your choosing in Israel. It's kind of like having a wrestling steel cage match. Rather than have all this carnage, it's just going to be a one-on-one, which will determine the winner of the entire battle. Now, Goliath thought that was a great idea. He was huge and scary. You know who didn't think that was a good idea? All of Israel. They thought that was a terrible idea. No one wanted to face this guy. And it reminds me of the challenges we all face in life. We don't always want to face them head on. When there's something that's very uncomfortable, we might want to put it off or ignore it until we're forced to confront it. But there are some things in life that we just want to put off as long as we can. And I'm sure all of us can think of something in our life that we should have dealt with sooner, but we didn't because we just didn't want to deal with it. Well, Israel is facing that same thing at this moment as Goliath proposes a resolution to this war. And how do I know that? Well, Scripture says so. For 40 days, the Philistine Goliath came forward every morning and evening and took his stand and made that proposal. So for 40 days, Israel just kind of ignored it. They just pretended nothing was going on. Now, David wasn't at the front, in quotes. He was home watching the sheep. Nothing had changed for him since he was chosen to be the next king of Israel. He was still a nobody. David's father, Jesse, though, one day sent David to those front lines not to fight, but to bring supplies to his brothers who were up there ready to fight against the Philistines. So David was an errand boy. Bring food for your brothers. And so he went. And when he got there, he got the lay of the land, saw what was going on, and he asks a really good question. He sees the dilemma. He sees that Israel has done nothing for 40 days because no one wants to face Goliath. And he asks this question. If somebody did that, went and fought Goliath and won, what would the king do? Which is a different way of saying, what's in it for me if I face Goliath and win? I think it's a good question. You're putting your life at risk. And this was the answer. The king will give a great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his father's family from taxes in Israel. That's a pretty good deal. I mean, I think the last thing, being exempt from taxes, is good enough. But wealth, marriage into the royal family, and exempt from taxes. And this sounds really good. I'm sure it's piquing David's interest, but there's a problem. David's brothers hear him asking this question, and it's clear they're not happy about it, because as soon as they hear it, this is what is said by the oldest. Why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the desert? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle. Yikes. Even though David has seven brothers, he must feel like an only child. He's always being left out. He's being treated with contempt. And I would imagine because he is the one designated to watch the sheep, he feels a kinship to the sheep because it's pretty clear he is the black sheep of the family. But he is about to become an unlikely hero, which will change his life completely. Not only did his brothers overhear the question of what will the king do if someone faces Goliath and win, the king heard it. And he sends, King Saul sends for David and says, I heard you asking about what I'll do if someone beats Goliath. And David actually volunteers to go at this point. I'll totally go face Goliath. Now, what's funny is that King Saul is doubtful that this is a good decision. So even the king thinks that this isn't such a great thing. But David orally recites his resume regarding his qualifications to enter the battle. He says to the king, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. How about that? And so what does this mean to us when David does such a thing? It tells us a couple of things. It tells us that David has courage. It tells us that he has some skill. He's reciting his resume. And that he has faith. He trusts God will watch over him. Now, this is a huge faith for a young man. But I certainly think it's a reminder to us that whatever we face, when we're facing giants in our own life, when we face Goliath challenges, we're encouraged to believe that God is with us, win, lose, or draw. Now, when King Saul hears this, he must think, oh, what a nice sentiment. Let's, you know, pat David on the head. That's very cute. It's a nice thing that you say that, but he totally does not believe him. Matter of fact, he so doesn't believe him that he says, I'm going to let you go, but you're going to need help. God alone is not going to help you against this guy. And he dresses David in his armor, and he gives him the king's sword, because Saul believes that David needs all the help he can get, because God won't get him through this. So David puts all this stuff on, and he walks around and kind of tries it out, and he says, nope, it's not going to work. It's not who I am. It's not how I operate. And he takes it all off. And I was thinking to myself, well, this is totally a reminder to us, to me, and hopefully to you, is that whenever we face a challenge of any kind, we have to work from our strengths. We have to be ourselves. We can't be somebody else, nor should we be. That God has created you for who you are and has shaped you. You are special. And you must use the strength that God has given you, your gifts, not to be someone else. I know it's painfully aware to you that I am not Billy Graham, but I'm not supposed to be either. Neither am I my father. I'm just not. God created me to be me, no one else. And this is the realization that David comes to with all this armor and a sword and all this stuff, is that he has to face this challenge on his own terms and not on King Saul's. So instead of using that sword, he goes down to the stream and he picks up 5 smooth stones for his slingshot, which he has skill in using. So it moves us on to realize that David is doing it on his own terms, using his own strength, but he's also now prepared. He stated that God will deliver him, but it's not like he's going to stand there and say, okay, God, do your thing, that he is joining into this and he's saying, I must be prepared. And he grabs 5 stones, not just one. He is ready for whatever comes. Now, I like what Malcolm Gladwell says about a moment like this. He's a social scientist, great author, and he says this: achievement is talent plus preparation. His talent is in using the slingshot, which he's been using his whole life, not the sword. He prepares by grabbing those stones because he knows how to use that. He relies on his own strengths. So what are the tools that you use when you face challenges? I know for me, I was thinking about this. The thing that I use when I'm facing something that I need to confront, so I use my head. I study. That's what I do. When I face something, I research. I gather information. I try to look at every angle of a situation. I try to ask myself, what are the blind spots? What am I missing? I prepare to face a challenge by studying. I mean, every week I have the privilege to stand before you and speak, but I always begin with a blank page. And I have to come up here ready and prepared to speak, not just wing it. How do I do that? I research. I do other things. But mostly I study, but I also understand that's who I am and that's what I bring to a challenge in life. David does the thing that he's most comfortable with, and it is a clue that we should too. So Goliath sees David with his slingshot. He can't believe it. He almost sees it as an insult, right? He said to David, am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? Wow, you got to be kidding me. And I think most people would agree with this assessment of Goliath. This is not going to end well for David. The odds makers of that day had picked Goliath. But as you heard, David responds, "Look, Goliath, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." That's quite a declaration, mind you. He said, it's not just my problem. This is also God's. I'm not going out here alone, David says. And he let everyone know that God is a part of this equation. Which, by the way, I mean, you might go, okay, I know the story. That's a far cry from walking out into this valley and quietly praying, "Oh Lord, what have I signed up to do? I'm totally regretting this. You need to bail me out. Please save me. I've made a horrible mistake." No, he speaks up and says, "This is God's battle as well as mine." David wasn't at that moment telling God, "Well, I made a big mistake and I'm in deep here." He doesn't tell God how big his problems are. He told the giant Goliath how big God is. And as you hear, the rest is history. With one rock from David's slingshot, and it's all over. Which, by the way, when I look at the story as an adult, and the older I get, I'm always surprised that this is one of the Bible stories that ends up being one that we tell with Sunday school. Because when you hear it, you go, it's pretty intense stuff. But yet, David and Goliath is a mainstay among Sunday school curriculum. But David had the courage to face Goliath. And don't forget what courage is, because I think we all can have it. Courage is not the absence of fear. It is the ability to act in the presence of fear. How about that? That is a good reminder that courage is not about not being afraid. It's about being able to act when we are afraid. And you know, we all have Goliaths. Personal ones, organizational ones, even national ones. There are giants all over the land. And no matter what we face, whether it is a health care challenge in our own lives, or a financial scare, or relational problems, or work problems, we have giants out there. And here's the thing, is that if we don't face our giants, they will have their way with us. They will make our lives worse if we try to ignore them. And as you know, it's not just personal ones, too. They might get the most attention. But even this past week in the news, what have we had but two high-profile suicides in our nation this week? And then we hear that the Centers of Disease Control have told us in their latest report that suicide rates have jumped 30% since 1999. That is one national Goliath, if I've ever heard of one. And that's just one among several. But here's what I'm going to tell you, is that ignoring a problem has never solved a problem. Might be a 1% that ever it goes away. So it's a reminder to us. And especially as Christians, when we look at the cross, it is a reminder when Jesus says, "In this life you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world." He promises to go with us through the hills, the valleys, the ups, and the downs. And I can't tell you not to be afraid when the giants come knocking on your door. But I can encourage all of us to have courage, because our God is always close and promises always to be with us. Amen.